are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Thursday, everybody. And in what feels like a forever recurring theme at this point, we're going to talk about the Wolves' most recent loss, breaking down what happened and discussing studs and duds from the game against the Jazz on Wednesday evening. It's the sixth straight loss for the Wolves. And so we're going to talk a little bit about what happened. And weirdly enough, this didn't actually seem like a game that the Wolves played that poorly in, although there was definitely some shoddy defense. But we'll get into all that in just a moment. We're also going to take a peek back at the last couple of weeks, try and diagnose where things began to get derailed before this most recent losing streak. And now with the Clippers on the horizon on Friday night, I'm not sure things are going to get better until they take on the Pelicans next week. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. All right, let's go ahead and get into Wolves Jazz. The Wolves were in the game for most of the first half in this one and played fairly well. The defense was fine. Neither team could really hit the broadside of the barn in the first quarter. It actually felt a little bit like we were watching a game from maybe 15 years ago. The final score, or the score at the end of the first quarter, was 25-23. I think each team made like one three-pointer, maybe two three-pointers in the first quarter. And there were a lot of mid-range shots. Donovan Mitchell, Andrew Wiggins made a couple. It was weird. It just was a strange quarter of basketball. But the Wolves were right in it. And the second quarter, kind of the same way early on, the Jazz don't have an overwhelmingly good bench at all. And the Timberwolves, Kata Bates-Diop, missed this game with flu-like symptoms. And outside of Jeff Teague, the Wolves don't really have much scoring on their bench either, with Jake Layman out, Bates-Diop out, Okogie in the starting lineup now. There just isn't much scoring punch off the Wolves bench. And so things, the second quarter kind of started out the same way, and the Jazz actually opened up a seven-point lead with under 2 minutes left in the second quarter, and it kind of felt like things were about to snowball. But then the Wolves went on there was just a flurry. Wiggins hit a three, Mitchell hits a two, Towns hits a three, Gobert scores, and then Jeff Teague hits a three to pull the Wolves within two. The Jazz turn it over, Teague hits a shot in the paint with under 2 seconds to play, just beats the buzzer, and the Wolves are actually pulled even with the Jazz at 59 at halftime. So, I mean, this was a tie game at halftime, and things didn't really completely get out of hand until the middle portion of the third quarter. The Jazz actually came out of the locker room on fire. They hit back-to-back threes. Gobert blocked two shots in the first minute and 10 seconds, basically, of the third quarter, and the Jazz opened up a six-point lead. The Wolves fought back a little bit. They actually got back even with 9 minutes to play in the third quarter, so it wasn't a complete snowball, but then it was. The Jazz went on a quick 8-0 run. There were a lot of, if you look at the play-by-play, at ESPN or NBA.com or anywhere for the third quarter of the game, the Jazz, their made shots is just an avalanche of three-pointers and dunks. I mean, seriously, if we just go down and list the shots that they made, not counting the Wolves shots in between, Ingles three-pointer, Bogdanović three-pointer, Bogdanović layup, Mitchell three-pointer, Royce O'Neal three-pointer, Gobert dunk, there's an Ingles floating shot in there, Bogdanović three-pointer, Gobert dunk, Ingles three-pointer, Bogdanović dunk, and Green three-pointer, a couple of free throws. So every single, and then they finish it off with a Niang three-pointer at the end of the third quarter. So every single shot that the Jazz made in the third quarter, they made a bunch of three-pointers, a bunch of dunks and layups. There was one two-pointer that wasn't a dunk or a layup, and then two free throws made. So it's not like they were getting to the line continuously. They were shooting three-pointers and dunks, and that's it. And they finished the third quarter with a 14-point lead, actually, on that Niang three-pointer right before the buzzer. The Jazz led by 14 going to the fourth quarter. And the Wolves didn't really provide much resistance early in the quarter. Towns started the quarter on the bench. By the time he came back in, they were down by 20. And the game was over with basically 5 minutes to play. The Wolves, the Saunders, I guess to his credit, left the starters in, or his left a first team rotation. First team, I guess Culver wasn't on the floor, but largely starters in the game. Towns was in the game, Wiggins, Covington, and he wanted to fight back and make a game out of this. And the Wolves kind of did that. They even challenged a call. They got it right, you know, in the final minute or so, and ultimately only lost by 11. The game wasn't that close. On the one hand, it just felt like they were trying to get the margin of the final losing margin closer. But at the same time, it was good that the Wolves actually did fight. They did a little full court press. They were trying to trap, and positive that they were still playing hard, that they were willing to play hard, that Saunders had them playing hard. Jim Peterson, Dave Benz on the Fox Sports North broadcast were talking about the Wolves practice, and they were doing a 4-on-4 shell drill at shoot around and how hard they were practicing. And, you know, trying to correct things. Apparently there's a players only meeting after the game in Phoenix on Monday. The Wolves have the Clippers on Friday, and then they're at home. They're off Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Don't play again until next Wednesday against the Pelicans. Last time the Wolves had a long break at home was around Thanksgiving. They came back and were flat on that Sunday matinee. This time they've got a couple other things going for them. They're on a long losing streak, so they're definitely going to have a couple of hard practices in there and can still get a couple of days off. So the Wolves can turn around and have a, you know, a film session or whatever on Saturday after the Clippers game, maybe take Sunday off, have hard practices Monday and Tuesday, or maybe they'll practice Sunday, get Monday off, and practice again on Tuesday before shooter on Wednesday. But the Wolves will have a chance to get at least two practices in and still basically a day, day and a half of rest before they take on the Pelicans, which is an extremely winnable game next Wednesday. So there's a lot to unpack with this team right now. They're 10-14. They're a couple games out of the playoff picture. We've talked at length about December 15th being the date where everybody that was acquired in the offseason league-wide is able to be moved. Assuming the Wolves lose to the Clippers on Friday and fall to 10-15, it'd be interesting to see how fast the front office decides to shake things up. My guess is they want to give this team one more stretch of games with a winnable game against the Pelicans and then a road trip with a couple of tough games, but certainly some winnable ones too, and just kind of see where things shake out, you know, maybe through the rest of the calendar year before anything crazy happens. But the trade rumblings are definitely, the Wolves are involved in those conversations nationally when you hear about potential teams potentially looking to make splashes. And the Wolves really could be buyers or sellers. And, you know, we'll talk a lot more about that in the coming days. But anyways, we'll get back to Wolves Jazz here. We're going to talk studs and duds in this game individually, who played well for the Wolves and who didn't. And then after that, we're going to take a peek back at the last few games. And I promise it won't be all that painful, or at least we'll do our best to not get too in the weeds on this, but just kind of try and identify what's happened differently for the Timberwolves that has caused them to be in this spiral that they're in currently. Before we get into studs and duds, I want to acknowledge that the Wolves actually didn't play that poorly in this game, other than some of the defense, especially in the third quarter. As I mentioned, the Jazz almost exclusively made three-pointers and dunks in the third quarter. But the Wolves really, really, I mean, they competed in this game. And this is somewhat anecdotal, but if you went back and charted every single make and miss for both teams, the Jazz had an inordinate number of shots that they made with hands and faces on the perimeter. The Wolves, for the most part, were doing a good job of contesting jumpers. I think of, there was a corner three by Royce O'Neal. There was the buzzer beater by George Niang at the end of the third quarter, or two that stick out in my mind. But there were several three-pointers that the Wolves were actually doing a good job of defending, and the Jazz made the shot anyways. They were 16-35 from beyond the arc. That's 45.7%. Niang was 3-of-3. Ingles was 3-of-6. Manuel Mudiay was 2-of-3, and he's not a very good three-point shooter. Jeff Green was 2-of-5. I mean, it was just a weird deal. And the Jazz, who I talked about not having a good bench, everybody on their bench was a plus 12 or better, and everybody played 12 or more minutes off that bench. So that was also very strange. And the Wolves, for their part, I mean, especially Karl Anthony Towns. Towns ended up with a decent game numbers-wise, but he was only 6-of-15 from the field. And he also had at least 4 or 5 shots that were most of the way down and rimmed out. Covington had a couple, and Wiggins was just slightly off. I mean, this is one of those games where he was being aggressive, but even when he got into the paint, he had a couple of shots that looked like they should have gone down. And it really did feel like the Wolves were just not getting the same roles that the Jazz were when it came to the ball on the rim, which is super strange. But I promise, if you go back and watch this game, especially the third quarter, and watch the Jazz makes and the Wolves misses, and there was absolutely some bad luck involved. So I don't want to be too doomsday just on this game. It just feels that way after losing the previous five games in a row. If this was if the Wolves had just won a couple, or if this was the second loss in a row, this would just kind of be a shoulder shrug and, man, just wasn't their night. But because it's the sixth loss in a row, there's a tendency for everybody to overreact to this game, when in reality, it's been an avalanche of tough games, tough losses, close losses, and with a couple of stinkers mixed in. But I don't know that I would even really consider this a stinker. I mean, that stretch in the third quarter was rough, but again, the Wolves competed really throughout outside of that stretch. In terms of individual performances, I mentioned Towns. He finished with 21 and 11, but he was 6 of 15 from the field, 2 of 9 from beyond the arc. He did shoot 9 free throws and make 7 of them. He only had 3 assists to 5 turnovers in this game, and just 1 steal, no blocks. He was okay. There were a lot of forced shots from Towns, which led to the lower efficiency in this game. He was at least physical with Gobert. But Gobert himself ended up with 20 points and 16 rebounds, 8 of 11 shooting, and only turned the ball over 3 times. I wouldn't necessarily say that Gobert outplayed Towns. Gobert was spoon-fed the ball at the rim quite a bit, and Towns was stuck kind of in no man's land trying to help on the Jazz guards, primarily Donovan Mitchell. But this wasn't Towns' best game. It seemed like he was forcing things after not getting enough touches the last couple times out, and it just wasn't as efficient. Gobert's always a tough matchup. So Towns had the one dominant game against Gobert in Utah, and then had the opposite, really struggled against Gobert in that home and home of the second half of that in Minnesota a couple weeks ago. And this was somewhere in the middle. It was just an okay game from Towns. The Wolves needed more from him if they were going to win this. Wiggins led the Wolves starters in scoring with 26 points, but he was 11 of 23 from the floor. He was 3 of 8 from beyond the arc, meaning that his inside the arc shooting on the night was, 8 of 15 inside the arc. He had a number of shots in the paint that rattled out. He shot more mid-range jumpers than we've seen in a while. He made a couple of them and missed a couple. They weren't really bad shots in the flow of the offense, but it was a little bit startling to see that kind of the number of mid-range shots tick up a little bit. So that's, again, something to keep an eye on. He did have 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, just 2 turnovers. So he did contribute in multiple facets a little bit better than Towns did. So a solid game from Wiggins. Again, similar to Towns, just it took him a lot of shots. Nothing was easy. It took him a lot of shots to get his points in this one. Jeff Teague was the best player on the floor for the Wolves in this game, and there's really no two ways about it. He was one of only 2 Timberwolves that was positive in the plus-minus category, Josh Okogie being the other one. Teague had 32 points on 11 of 16 shooting. He made all 4 of his 3-point attempts, and he really didn't. I think he missed like 1 shot in the first half. He had a couple of bad misses in the paint that rimmed out that looked a lot more like the Jeff Teague from a few nights ago in L.A., and I guess, yeah, L.A. was the really bad one, but the Jeff Teague that we've seen a few times this year where he's just missing layups and floaters. There were a couple of those misses late in the game. But besides that, 4 of 4 from behind the arc, 6 of 6 from the free throw line, 6 assists and 0 turnovers in 36 minutes off the bench. He also had 4 rebounds, a steal, and a block. This is just a really good game from Jeff Teague, and he's playing with a ton of confidence. I don't know how much of this is, you know, I'm trying to be the scorer off the bench that a team's going to want to trade for in February, a contending team wants to trade for, or he's a free agent this summer and he's 31 and he's trying to get that next contract. And that's okay. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, because he's not playing selfishly. His shot, the Wolves need Teague to be aggressive if he's leading their second unit. He's essentially been the third best player on this team this year. And I'm not sure that you can slice it any other way. Covington would be the only other one with like an argument, but he hasn't been consistent enough. Teague's had a lot of peaks this season where he's playing really, really well. And there's been a couple of valleys, but overall it's been night and day better than last season. And if he keeps playing like this, I think it's extremely likely that he's moved at the deadline with $19 million expiring this summer, especially if the Wolves, are 8-10 games under 500 at that point. I don't think there's any question that Teague would get traded, but he was fantastic in this game and really kept the Wolves bench unit afloat. The Wolves had three guys off the bench that were scoreless. Gorgui Dieng, Shabazz Napier, and Trevion Graham all shot 0-for-2 from the field, all missed one three-pointer, and had 0 points in this game. Jordan Bell had 6 points, was 2-of-2 for the field, 2-of-2 from the free throw line. He didn't score until late in the game when the Wolves were trying to make their comeback. Had 3 offensive rebounds, no defensive rebounds in 14 minutes. So I'm going to just go ahead and lump all the Wolves bench minus Jeff Teague into a duds category. I mean, Jordan Bell was okay. He was active, solid on defense, but he needs to rebound the ball better, and didn't really have much of an impact on this one until it was too late. So the Wolves bench is collectively duds from this game. Jarrett Culver had just 4 points in 21 minutes, 2-of-8 shooting, 3 rebounds, missed both of his three-pointers, was a minus 14. He falls into the duds category in this one, really struggled, and appears to have lost a little bit of that confidence that he's had for much of the season. Robert Covington at first kind of looks like he had a good game, 14 points, 7 rebounds, 5-of-13 shooting, but he was 3-of-10 beyond the arc. And 2 assists, 2 steals. He was a minus 16, the worst mark on the Wolves, which is kind of strange considering Okogie, in roughly the same number of minutes, was a +3, and they both started this game. Covington struggled on defense. Both Covington and Okogie struggled to contain Donovan Mitchell. That was a big issue in this game. And they both contributed a little bit on offense, but if the Wolves are only going to get 14 from Covington and 13 from Okogie, just to stay in this game, they needed 32 from Jeff Teague off the bench. So there was an article written by one of my colleagues at Dunking with Wolves, actually, I think just yesterday before this game, about how the Wolves need a third scorer. That starting lineup doesn't have a third scorer if Teague's coming off the bench. And Teague wasn't really scoring when he was in the starting lineup either. He wasn't squeezing the trigger on his own shots. If Covington's, you know, he's not going to score more than 14 a game anyways. Okogie hasn't shown the ability to do that. And Culver just isn't there yet. That's certainly an issue. To only have two guys in the starting lineup that you can rely on to consistently score more than like 12 points a game. So something to keep an eye on. Both Covington and Okogie, I'm not going to put them in either category because they both contributed a little bit offensively, but struggled on defense. Mitchell, for his part, had 30 points on 13 of 20 shooting, was really good in this game. So that's after not having, the Wolves had a really good plan against him in their first two games, but that didn't work this time around. Mitchell was making his mid-range shots. The Wolves weren't doing a very good job of contesting him in the mid-range, and I don't know if I'd have to watch back to see how they were doing fighting through screens, but watching it live, it really felt like the Wolves just weren't playing up on him quite as much as they needed to, and for some reason were more concerned with him getting into the paint. But he only did that a couple of times. He did most of his damage from the perimeter in this game. He had 6 assists and just 2 turnovers. And he was really the only perimeter player that killed the Wolves. Joe Ingles was 3-of-6 from beyond the arc. And then some of the guys off the bench, as I mentioned, did some damage, but that was not to be expected. And for the most part, the Wolves defended the arc fairly well. It was just kind of the in-between stuff and Donovan Mitchell, really, in the middle stages of the game that really dominated and turned the tide in this game. All right, next up, we're going to take a peek back at the last couple of weeks and just try and figure out what exactly has happened and what the Wolves need to do moving forward to right the ship. Okay, I want to take you back a month. Pretty much exactly 30 days. The Wolves have gone 3-10 over the past month. It's really easy to point to the devastating loss in Oklahoma City as the, I guess, the ignition in this just kind of terrible tumble down the hill that the Wolves have taken over the past week. And I think that that's fair to some extent. But the wheels really started to come off a full month ago. The Wolves were 7-4 and had just won at Detroit, beaten San Antonio at home pretty easily, and Wiggins had a couple of dominant games. It really felt like this was a, you know, a playoff team. 7-4, Wiggins, you know, pulling it together and figuring things out. And then Wiggins missed that Saturday's game against the Wizards, who at the time were like 3-6 or 3-7. The Wolves had already beaten the Wizards once without Towns. It felt like, hey, they can win this game at home. Things will be fine. Wiggins misses the game. The Wolves get blown out by the Washington Wizards at Target Center. And that dropped the Wolves to 7-5. The next day was a back-to-back against Houston. They weren't going to win that game. That's when things kind of started to really head downhill. Then the home-and-home against the Jazz, the win at Utah felt nice, but then a loss at home to Utah, and then a loss at home to Phoenix, which was also extremely disappointing. It was also a frustrating game, a Phoenix team that had no Aaron Baines, no Ricky Rubio. The Wolves themselves were a little shorthanded. They didn't have Josh Okogie. Travion Graham was a little banged up. Jalen Noel played a lot in this game. This was the first game that Kata Bates-Diop saw extended run and played really well. But that two-point loss to Phoenix, in which the Wolves only managed to score 98 points, was pretty frustrating. And that was kind of the next, like, oh, man, back-to-back weekends, back-to-back bad home losses. What's the deal here? Follow that up with back-to-back road wins against Atlanta and San Antonio, which is the only time the Wolves have won back-to-back games since early November. And that also felt good, mostly because the second of those games was in San Antonio. The Wolves went 2-0 against San Antonio in the early part of the season. But at the time, the Spurs really weren't playing well. Believe it or not, that's the last time the Wolves won. They headed home for what felt like should have been another winnable game to win 3 in a row, headed into a long road trip against Memphis, lost by 8 to Memphis, played really well in Dallas, lost a tough game despite holding Luka Doncic down, and then the debacle in Oklahoma City where they're up 2 with a second left and Towns at the free throw line, delay of game penalty, missed free throws, an accidental made free throw, a crazy play from the Thunder at the buzzer, and then just a terrible overtime period. I mean, you take that moment in time when the delay of game happened, and since then, the Wolves have been outscored by, I don't know, 14 points in that game. And then you take 17-point loss in the Lakers game and a 16-point loss in Phoenix and an 11-point loss in Utah. And they've been outscored by double digits in every game since that moment, including that Thunder game. And I think that's kind of the second initiating factor to this tumble. That game in Dallas, the Wolves played quite well, and that was only a week ago. I know that's hard to believe, but they handled Luka Doncic fairly well in that game, and it was the weird Jalen Brunson minutes and the ancillary players for the Mavs that took control of that game. And the Wolves didn't play that badly. They played well in Oklahoma City. They overcame a 10-point deficit late and took a lead that they shouldn't have relinquished. And since that point, losing at LA, there's no shame in that, but they didn't compete all that well. Losing in Phoenix isn't great, and especially not losing by 16 in Phoenix, and then losing, getting down by 20 at home to the Jazz, a Jazz team that's struggling, that the Wolves have beaten once already on the road this year. Things just have not been where they need to be dating back to a month ago. 3-10 in the last month. And who knows, maybe the Wolves will go on a decent stretch here at the rest of December, but Things are going to get more difficult before they get easier with the Clippers tonight, or Friday night, excuse me, and then a tough West Coast road trip once again. And the Wolves really missed some opportunities going back to, all the way back to that Washington game, the Memphis games, 0-2 against Phoenix. Just, you know, win half of those, and the Wolves are a 500 team right now, and things feel different. But it's easy to blame the Oklahoma City thing, and that's probably the moment. If this team ends up winning, just like, you know, going like 30-52 this year or something, that's probably the moment that everyone's going to blame. But, you know, coming into that game, it's not like the Wolves had been lighting the world on fire. I guess coming into that game, they were 3-6 over their previous 9 games, had lost a couple in a row anyways. So I think it traces back to not being able to figure out how to play without Wiggins for a couple of games, and then not winning winnable games before they got to that really tough stretch in their schedule with at Dallas, at Oklahoma City, at the Lakers. So all that to say, the impetus for this losing skid is not simply the Oklahoma City incident, although that's certainly kind of been the secondary issue over the past few weeks that has just continued this spiral and made it a little bit more rapid, including that game. Now, of course, they've since that moment have lost 4 in a row and haven't, you know, all of them have been double digit losses. And the Wolves are just plummeting down the Western Conference standings. I mentioned the Clippers are next. That's going to be tough. few off days, and then New Orleans, and then a four-game road trip, Denver, Portland, Golden State, Sacramento. If they can split these next six games, I think that's reasonable. I mean, home against the Pelicans, at Portland's winnable. It's tough to play there, but they're not, haven't been good lately. And then at Golden State and at Sacramento are winnable too. You figure they lose to the Clippers and Nuggets. So best case scenario looks like a 4-2, but a 3-3 would be fine. I mean, I think anybody would take that after losing six in a row. So let's hope that that's what happens over these next stretch of games. Early part of next week, we're going to get back into some trade talk with the December 15th date on Sunday and no games until Wednesday. So keep an eye and an ear out for that. We'll be back on Friday to talk more, of course, about the Clippers game on Friday night. The Wolves will be wearing their City Edition jerseys for the first time, so that'll be fun. At least we have that to look forward to. So, all right, that's all I have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Podcast, and we'll catch you next time.